Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This episode is brought to you by Twizzlers. Long day, late night, feeling a little bored? Twizzlers is the ultimate sidekick for any moment of the day, no matter what kind of day you're having. The perfect level of sweet and a fun excuse to sit back and relax. Unwind with Twizzlers. To buy now, visit Hersheyland.com/Twizzlers.
Welcome to the Good Food Podcast. I'm Tom Kerridge, and in this episode, I'll be chatting to Atul Kulcher, and we'll be talking about spicing up spring. There'll be tips on using spices and how we like to cook with our favorite seasonal ingredients.
But also in terms of seafood, there is so much of beautiful seafood comes out this time, and I love using it. And especially among the shellfish, mussels are kind of really my favorite this time of the year.
They're abundant, they're great,
they're great.
They're budget, they're pocket friendly.
Absolutely. You
know, they're fantastic.
Absolutely.
To use.
And yeah. They taste amazing in curries.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
what I want to
mussels,
tell them. Curried mussels are beautiful.
They really do take on that flavour very, very well, don't
Easily.
They? That spice in me. Plus, Atul's favourite dish. Welcome to another episode of Good Food Podcast with me, Tom Kerridge. And today I'm joined by fellow Marlow restaurateur, superstar, great friend, brilliant chef, Atul Kulcher. How are you, Atul?
I'm very good, Tom. Good to see you, sir.
Nice to see you too, my friend. What's going on? What exciting things is happening in your world right now? Have you got any books happening this year? We've got any television? What's going on?
So books are a little far away. I'm still cooking them, let's put it this way.
How many books have you done now?
I've done six.
Six books.
And I want to write the next one. This will be about my mum's food, the food I grew up on. So quite passionate about it. And I lost my mum last year, so it'll be a great homage to her. In terms of TV, I recently worked with Fred Sirix and Emma Wells and made a beautiful series with them in which I'm a series judge with a fellow judge, Crystal Pereira, and it's called World Cook Series 2. And I got to travel the world, Tom. I ate in some fantastic places, never mind the contestants who were cooking amazing food. I think I put on a lot of weight doing that.
Yeah, but traveling the world and eating, what a rubbish job that sounds like, asshole. Yeah, but on your world travels, where was the best place you went? Where was it somewhere that took you by surprise that you thought, wow, this food, this cuisine's incredible?
You know, every place was a beautiful spot and it had its own beauty. But the one country where I went to and I didn't think much of it before landing there was Iceland.
Oh, really?
I had absolutely no idea. I went there blank. I knew very little about Icelandic food. I knew great seafood, but other than that, I knew nothing. But wasn't I in for surprise? Really flat landscape, but it has its beauty. I'd never seen anything like this.
It's an incredible place, isn't it, Iceland?
Incredible place.
I'd be so lucky to have been there as well. And it's such a... Because it's almost so far removed from anything that we know or anything that we're used to. It's such an incredible place and wonderful people as
Beautiful
well.
Beautiful people. Wonderful yeah. people. Great hospitality. They're so warm, so loving, and they're so happy to see you. And it's very expensive, I must say. Even a beer would actually send the bankers behind you what you've been doing. But still, every penny I spent there was worth it. I really enjoyed being there.
And that's quite interesting because I said that it's one of those places where the food is so removed from anything that I do and anything that you do. And in terms of spicing levels and cooking. You know, you're renowned for being like a master of flavor, of spicings. And, you know, you've been cooking some incredible food for the last, 30 years in Mayfair, have you been?
30 years in Mayfair this year, Tom. Can you believe it?
I mean, think of how much you paid in rent in that over 30 years.
Oh, God, thank you. Thanks for reminding.
I know that the blue one, Mayfair on a Monopoly board, is the most expensive one. But doing wonderful spiced flavor combinations, bringing your, I suppose, take on traditional heritage cuisine and turning it into more of a British palate?
I think that's what I did, Tom. I came here in 94. It took a couple of years for me to get the grips to understand what I'm supposed to do or what people are expecting of me. And thanks to my dad, who visited me after 2.5 years and ate at my restaurant and said, "Are you sure you want to live in this country?" I said, "What do you mean that? I've done okay. You know, I've got great review from people like Faye Mashler, A.A. Gill." He said, "They are English people. They're very polite. They don't say bad things about anyone. But I am an Indian and I'm your father. I can tell you what you're doing wrong." And he kind of pointed out things. I think I was cooking like an Indian boy living in Indian subcontinent. I had not adapted after coming into this country. And that was a very clear-cut message to me. And after he left, he pointed me out. He said, "You know, you should go and talk to your suppliers and understand what they bring from the markets or what they bring from their beautiful seas and try using that stuff rather than just buying things off the market which you think relates to you." I got it. I realized it pretty quickly that how wrong I was. I had a fish called pomfrey. I'm sure, Tom, you've never cooked with it before.
No, never.
It's a fish from Indian Ocean. And I was just comfortable cooking with it in India, so I started cooking with it here because it was available, frozen perhaps.
Yeah.
But then I realized, gosh, I've been so wrong. I've not been using any seasons. I've not been using fresh produce. I've not been following the nature. And I was just defying everything and doing which I was comfortable with. I changed the entire cycle. I took a kind of year out, not in sense of cooking, but understanding. And then my menu started changing. And then year 2001, I won the first Michelin star. I called my dad and told him, "Dad, I got a Michelin star." He said, "What's that?" he had no idea what star meant.
Yeah.
Then I told him it's a company from France and they sell tires. And I said, "Don't worry, they're trying to sell their tires to you. So you carry on cooking."
I love that. I love that you didn't see the relevance of it. But that's incredible. That's amazing to see that all of a sudden, you know, you're using your knowledge of everything that you'd understood, but then starting to buy into the seasonality of European and particularly Northern European,
like absolutely.
Seasonality.
So, Tom, you know, cauliflower and orange were winter things to me. Even peas, for example. We get it in winters in India. And I was thinking, why chefs are using peas in summer here?
Yeah.
And then I realized, oh my God, I'm so wrong. I need to understand this first. Wherever I go in the world, I need to understand this first. And this was the first time I was out of India. I'd never been abroad. So it took some time. It took some learning, but I never looked back after that.
How important then is seasonality to your cuisine in the way that you cook now?
You know, in India, which has always had a very slow economic growth, for us, there were no refrigerators when I was growing up. So seasonal food is the only thing you will get. What you get in the market, your mom will be cooking or your dad will be cooking that for you. To come here and find everything on the frozen shelf and, you know, around the year, even watermelon will be available on December. Those things were kind of unheard of. So I was excited in one way. But as time has gone by, I'm thinking, I don't have to work against the nature. I live in a country, fine. We don't grow great tomatoes and basil and all those things, but we grow fantastic root vegetables. We grow great cabbage, great potatoes. I'm going to use that to my advantage. And that's what I started doing.
And now springtime, though, how important is that? Does your menu come alive like so many chefs up and down the country where, you know, we talk about, you mentioned peas there, they're slightly later into the summer, but that the first asparagus of the season
I
and
love
the wild
that.
Garlic and all of those kind of like green shoots of growth, does
Absolutely.
That suddenly change a vibrancy in your menu?
Absolutely, Tom. You know, when I walk down from, especially in Marlow, from my one restaurant to the other, if the bluebells have started coming out in the Higgins Park, it means start looking to change your menu quickly. I start looking for asparagus, as you said. Sometimes when I can afford it, I'll go for wild salmon as well. But these are the things which make me smile, make me happy. But I've always been excited about seasons in this country. I know we got a lot of rain, but I got used to of it now, and I've come up with an expression that it's only water.
You've been here over 30 years. You've only just got used to the rain. My God.
It's only water.
Yeah, it's only water.
But yes, weather and seasons are incredibly important to set our moods, set our appetites, and also to make us kind of remain excited about what we want to cook for people.
So then when it comes to spicing and driving those kind of, I suppose, Indian flavors that we normally associate. Now, spice doesn't always mean hot. Spicing, people
it's
confuse.
Flavor.
It's flavor. Yeah. So then we start using spicing. Does that alter seasonally? Do winter spicing change to spring and summer spicing?
So yes, there are changes that are brought in, but they're very gentle flavors. So in summer, if you look at typical Indian family living in India, during summer you will see that they do not use a lot of chilies, for example, because it makes you sweat, it makes you hot. So they would be using black pepper and chili more towards winter. Even ginger is not used so much in summer. But things like mustard seed, fennel seeds, black fungus, they call it, the stone moss, all those things are used more in summer and not in winter. So we divide the spices into heating spices or cooling spices, if you may divide like that. Things that are supposed to heat up your body and things that are supposed to cool your body. And they are used in certain degrees, in certain combinations, in two big weathers India has, which is hot and cold.
Yeah. Yeah, I quite like those as seasons because the cold is even not that cold, is it?
No, it's not.
So, I mean, your connection to food, cookery, and the way that you do use that kind of subtlety of warmth and spice, how difficult has that been to master over these years? And what advice and tips would you give to somebody who isn't just, they're just buying generic curry powder, mild or hot curry powder, and throwing it on dishes? Is there something that we could do or something we can learn from you to increase our understanding and how to get the best out of our ingredients?
You know, I still call that, I'm still learning, Tom. And it's a kind of skill and art or science, whatever you want to call it. It takes time and you get better with the practice. I still make mistakes, I'll be honest. But there are times when you bring your knowledge to practice and it helps you. So people who want to cook every day, I would say use the curry powder. There's nothing wrong in that. But set your mood. If it's a really soggy, rainy day out there and you want to warm up your heart using a slightly warmish, spicier curry powder, nothing wrong with that. But see, can you add a little bit of grated ginger to it? Or can you saute a little bit of mustard seed and green chili and pour over it as a tadka or a spice seasoning on top? All those things will elevate the flavor of the dish you're cooking. Make sure that it gels with that. Don't just take my word for it. Sometimes you don't need mustard seed on that, but if you need just cumin instead, or just little chili flakes and ginger to top up and warm up the dish, that just elevates the flavor to a new level.
Okay, so just have a play around, learn, get an understanding of it. The more,
absolutely.
Just go gentle, little bit by little bit. Don't go too hard and fast straight.
There's no need for it. Just go gentle, understand your palate. I think if you understand your palate, you will understand the flavors way better.
This episode is brought to you by Twizzlers. Long day, late night, feeling a little bored. Twizzlers is the ultimate sidekick for any moment of the day, no matter what kind of day you're having. The perfect level of sweet and a fun excuse to sit back and relax. Unwind with Twizzlers. To buy now, visit Hersheyland.com/Twizzlers.
Is buying spices, like dried spices, I mean, is there any hints and tips you can give us into that? What types we should be looking for? Are they good enough if you're buying them just from a generic supermarket, or should we be looking for a little bit something more specialist?
I think generic supermarkets aren't bad in the UK, to be honest, because these are fast-moving goods now in our supermarkets. We all, in this country, we consume spices to a great degree. And thanks to just not Indian food, but also Iranian food and Caribbean food, we all use different spices. So everything is available in abundance, but it moves fast as well. So there's no harm in buying from generic shops. How we keep the spices at home becomes a bigger challenge.
Right, okay. So, because we've all got spices, done dried spices in a drawer somewhere that are still there from 1996.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I say that, you know, each and every spice has got an essential oil in it. And that's what we all are after. We want to drag that essential oil into the cooking oil. And that cooking oil gets dispersed in our curry or braise, whatever we are cooking, and gives the flavor of that spice. Think about a beautiful extra virgin olive oil bottle you bought in your holiday when you were in Tuscany, brought it back and said, I'm going to use sparingly, so I will hide it behind the cupboard and use it when I need to. You forgot about it. 2 years later, you take that bottle out and pour it over your salad. It's rancid. Exactly same things happen to spices.
Right, okay.
Those oil go rancid over a period of time, and we just need to know that they are just not correct.
Okay, so get it, buy it, use it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. There's
absolutely
no point in buying something nice and then
Don't keep it for your grandchildren. It's not going to help anyone. So just use in smaller quantities. Use them more often. If you haven't used it, make a big batch of curry powder, distribute it in the family, spread the love.
Yeah, okay, get on with it. Make spices, use your spices, get things done, batch cook it, freeze it.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's a good one.
So now we're heading into spring. Is there any particular ingredient that you really fancy or are looking forward to using the most? And is there a difference between what you cook in the restaurant, ingredient-wise, or what you will look forward to cooking at home?
So both restaurant and home kind of mirror each other, Tom. You know, whatever I'm cooking in the restaurant, I want to feed that to my children as well and make sure, not exactly the same quality perhaps, but I want to make sure that they get the seasonal flavors as well. So the new potatoes are something which I'm very keen on. I love it. You know, that flavor, just even plain, simple boiled potatoes and put a little bit of garlic butter on it. It's just amazing. It's sensational for me. I like peas, as I mentioned before. Asparagus is another one. Courgette flowers are something I've just fallen in love with over a period of time. And I like to stuff them and make pakoras or fritters, Indian fritters with that. But also in terms of seafood, there is so much beautiful seafood comes out this time. And I love using it. And especially among the shellfish, mussels are kind of really my favorite this time of the year.
They're abundant, they're great, they're budget, they're pocket friendly,
absolutely.
You know, they're fantastic
absolutely.
To use.
And they taste amazing in curries.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
what I want to mussels, tell you. Curried mussels are beautiful.
They really do take on that flavor very, very well, don't
easily.
They? That spice in me. What's quite interesting there is all those ingredients you were talking about were very, they just felt very, you know, quintessentially British, asparagus and peas and new potatoes. You think of the best new potatoes in the world. You go Jersey Royals,
absolutely.
You know, and you just start going. And then you start thinking of all the spices and the ingredients that, and the way that you would cook them. And it becomes actually something that you think is quite traditionally spring and European suddenly becomes this kind of crossover that I think, wow, I bet that would taste amazing. That sounds really exciting. That sounds delicious. And you start. But where did this kind of love of food and understanding come from for you? You know, was it something childhood that, you know, you learned to cook at home? Was it always going to be your calling?
I'm not sure whether it was always my calling, but I grew up in a family where my grandfather was a baker when British were still ruling India. And he continued that profession till he was alive. My dad, who was a trained engineer, but when he married my mum, he saw his father-in-law being a baker and so passionate. Slowly, he converted himself and he became a caterer. So I grew up looking at dad and my grandfather conducting themselves with, you know, extreme precision, and they loved what they're doing. I was destined to become a doctor, Tom. And, you know, in Indian families, if you know few, they drive their kids really hard to become doctors, engineers, and if they're really useless, then accountants. Sorry, I apologize to all the accountants. I didn't mean that.
Yeah.
But I chose to go to a hotel school because I felt passionate about it.
And how did your parents take that?
My mum was an academic, but she was quite supportive. My dad was very happy. He said, look, I trained as an engineer. Now I work in food industry. Nothing wrong in it, but make sure you choose it very carefully because this can be very unforgiving industry. You if you love it, you will really do well. If you don't love it, you'll just become, he used the word, I shouldn't say that, rolling stone, he said. And he said, you should not do that. You should go with the passion and pick up the profession that you will think that you do yourself proud every day. And I think about his words and I'm grateful, because if I had become a doctor, I don't think I would have been that passionate. But as a chef, after 35 years of cooking, I'm still excited. I'm still thinking about new dishes. I'm still thinking about new techniques. Sometimes I think I'm a little dinosaur with all the young chefs come in the market and things they do. But I still remain excited about them too. So I met Chef Tom Brown the other day.
Yeah.
And talking to him about how he looks at food is so different than how I look at food. And I've seen him using spices with a lot of ease. And that fills my heart with a lot of love and warmth to see that how the younger generation is kind of adopting all the cultures we have in this country.
You mentioned there your father-in-law and your father, and was family and sitting around a table, was that very important as a kid, or with your parents, were they always so busy that you didn't quite get a chance? It's a romantic idea, or was it a reality?
It was a reality that, you know, they were always there for meals. Of course, sometimes we would skip lunch, not have family lunch because Mum was working. Mum was a teacher and Dad had catering contracts. But dinner was always, it was a ritual that family would sit together and eat, nothing doing. Breakfast was also something similar. We would wake up early. My dad was an early riser. He would wake up at 4:30. Doesn't matter what time he went to bed. And then let's be honest,
4:30, there's early and then there's early.
He's very early.
I go like 5:30 to 6, 6 o'clock, you know, but that's what most people are going, yeah, that's an early start. 4:30, that's a, like, some people ain't getting to bed till then.
I've done that. But Dad was always early riser. He liked his walks. He would go away and walk in the park and come back, make a cup of tea and wake Mum up. So Mum used to say, I trained him well.
Yeah.
So my dad was always the one who would wake everybody up. And he was the one who made breakfast in the morning for all of us. And I have continued that ritual for my children, Tom.
You get up at 4:30?
No, not 4:30, but I get up at 6 o'clock to make sure that I would make breakfast for them, because my hours are much longer. And sometimes I didn't see them go to bed because I was working. So I've kept that ritual and I wake up and make breakfast for my kids. And I've given those same cultural ethos to my kids, that family sticks together, especially for at least for one meal. It's important to talk, no phones on the table, no music going on, no telly. We'll just sit down and have plain chat. And it's real good fun too.
And do you think your kids will drop into the industry like you did?
I have no idea. They both are passionate about food. My son cooks incredibly well. I think he has been on your tail to train with you, and he's not found the time, but he wants to come and train this summer, I think. And he says, I love it, Dad, but I'm still exploring and I want to do my studies and I'll see where I fall in finally.
Maybe he's the one that will eventually become the doctor, keep everybody happy, yeah?
Maybe.
But what's your favorite dish then? What's the dish that makes you think of, this is the ultimate food to eat? This is what I want. Describe it to me. Tell me what that dish is and how you make it. And, you know, talk me through the process.
You know, one dish which always warms my heart and makes me smile, and I absolutely love it, is a biryani.
Okay.
It just ticks all the boxes on all the levels for me. So that's why I love it, because it can be protein-based, it can be vegetable-based. It has the rice, it has the spice, it has the flavors. You can add the crunch to it if you want to.
And where does the crunch come from?
Fried onions. Sometimes, you know, if you're having the South Indian one, they would make coconut chips. So fresh fried coconut, that's added to the biryani. And then you get that crunch also come through. So textures-wise also, it's fantastic. And you can serve it with different types of relishes, but mint raita comes on top for me. So there's a cooling effect also. So it's total yin-yang for me in one recipe.
And what about things like cooked in a tandoor? Now, a tandoor for me, it's one of those things that's the last probably 10 years has suddenly become, everybody talks about tandoori chicken and tandoori, like I love a tandoori spiced salmon dish that I put together, like it's a very simple flavour. But actual proper tandoori is a clay-fired oven, isn't it?
It is clay-fired oven. It's a kind of, people always explain it like a beehive kind of thing. Charcoal-fired or gas-fired. These days you get electric-fired as well. No doubt charcoal fired is very good, but to control the heat in charcoal fired is an art, and it takes a long time for people to master it. And I always say, in professional kitchens it's fine, but in home style kitchens try not to have it, because you can burn yourself in that. And the best part of having a clay oven is you can make breads and roast meats in the same oven very easily. And the flavor comes from, Tom, is not only charcoal, but also the type of clay you have. And in professional kitchens, especially if I have to cook lamb, we make a paste, which is made with mustard oil, spinach, paprika powder, a little bit of honey. We make a really fine paste of that. And when tandoor is kind of medium hot, that's the time with the wadding. We wrap the walls of tandoor with that.
Okay.
And when that burns, that gives a beautiful flavor to lamb.
Wow. Okay. So you actually rub that onto the walls
exactly.
of the oven
on
rather
the walls
than
of the
onto
oven.
The meat.
Absolutely. And there's a similar one made for chicken as well, which is rubbed on the walls when you want to cook chicken. So in professional kitchens, we play with different tricks to add more flavor because the smoke also has a flavor. And that's what you need to understand. As your meat is smoking and all the smoldering heat is coming from the sides of the oven, that also imparts flavor to the meat. So you need to understand
that. So much
that.
Of this is so based on a skill set and understanding a practice again and again and again and again. Is there any way that people could get those kind of replicate those flavors to a domestic sense without having to do practicing 50 times a night, every night of the week for the last 30 years in Mayfair?
But, you know, can be done. Nothing is impossible, but may not be to 100% to what we do it at professional kitchens. But, you know, Japanese have this tradition of when they're doing the barbecue, they make a liquid called tar or tare, and they baste it gently on the meat and then grill it and then baste it again. So that kind of paste can be made in a milder version and basted on the meat and cooked.
So you still get slow basting is a process that we all kind of know and understand. So if you do a slightly lighter version of that paste and just gently baste it onto the dish all the time, you'll get those sort of flavors.
Absolutely.
And now it sounds like there must have been a lot of practice to make perfect, particularly when you're using high spicing and high temperature and then slower cooking. What about cooking disasters? Have you had anything majorly disastrous happen?
Many times.
All right, tell me your worst one. What's the biggest one?
Tom, I always turn disasters into a laugh, joke, or create a new dish out of it. And one dish which remains close to my heart and has always been part of my menu in a big way for almost 20 plus years is a John Dory, recipe of John Dory. We used to make a beautiful spiced John Dory pan-fried, and we used to serve it on a Goan fish curry sauce, which was amazing. I was working at Tamarind, prepped all the John Dory, busy restaurant. I think there were about 25 portions of it, and I took a break, and I gave it to one of my chefs. I said, leave it in the fridge. When I come back, then I'll spice it. I don't want to spice it now. So, okay, chef, we'll do that. So he kept it. I don't know how he kept it. The whole tray tilted with the jerk or something, and the entire lot fell into a paste which was sitting below that. Came back from my break looking for John Dory, can't find it. And I'm asking, where did you keep it? Chef, I kept it there. Went in, looked for it, couldn't find it. An hour later, the guy who works at pantry, he went to bring in his mint chutney. And then he brings the mint chutney out and pulls the fish out of the mint chutney.
So the John Dory had fallen from the tray into the mint chutney.
The pot of mint chutney. And there was a big quantity of mint chutney. And I'm looking at it, I say, you know, it's already cooked in there because it's been sitting there for about 2 hours with all the spices and everything. I said, okay, what
so
do
all
we
the
do?
It almost cured it. So, yeah, okay.
I could actually cut it and make
serve it like a marinade.
Absolutely. But I said, okay, let's do something. So we made another quick paste with a little bit of mint chutney, and we added spinach and fenugreek leaves and a little bit of ginger, spiked it a bit more with green chili, and made a rub for John Dory, and then dusted it in spiced chickpea flour and pan-fried it, and served it with crispy spinach on top and a little bit of roasted tomatoes. it became a star dish for us eventually.
Wow. I love that. So the biggest cooking disaster has turned into one of your best-selling dishes.
Absolutely.
I tell you what, only you could do that with such a huge smile and turn it around into being something that's been the stalwart of Making Money and Mayfair for the last 30 years. Like, I love that. I already love the sound of this dish. What's the next cooking disaster you're coming up with?
I don't have no idea. I'll keep you posted.
Now, have you ever served anything ready-made and pretended you made it yourself? Now, I don't mean in a restaurant, maybe at home.
At home I have.
What have you done?
I bought the ready-made pizza bases. I served it, and my son was got a palate like, I should say, like a food critic. He just detested it. He said, "Dad, you know, you could do better than that. This is really not good. We are not doing this ever again." He was the one who just said, "Not having it."
He knew straight away. You weren't getting away with that.
Yeah, with all that barbecued meat on top and everything, it didn't work.
What pizza did you make? What pizzas do you like doing?
I personally like, you know, when we're having a barbecue, there'll be a lot of leftover, no doubt about it. And then in the night, everybody's going to feel peckish. So I always keep some pizza dough ready, and then we'll bake it with all the leftovers. So I think the smokiness is quite a favorite flavor for me. And I enjoy doing that. So I always keep whatever, either lamb or chicken or prawn, whatever we have done, or fish, anything left over goes on top of pizza for us.
Do you ever use spice mixes into a pizza? Do you do that crossover where we talk about, I suppose, British cuisine and then being your version spiced up? Would you ever do that on a pizza?
I've not flavored the pizza with any spices, I'll be honest. But yeah, flavored meats I have put on pizza. I've done that many times.
Yeah, and works nicely.
Works fantastically well.
Pineapple on a pizza?
If I'm drunk, yeah.
Yeah. Well, my next question is a guilty pleasure, but it sounds like it's a couple of beers and pizza with pineapple on it. What is your guilty pleasure at all?
Oh, Tom, you shouldn't have asked this one. Fried chicken.
See, now that is the second time we've had fried chicken as a guilty pleasure, or maybe it was a comfort food. What's your comfort food?
Comfort food is a red kidney bean stew, which my mum used to cook, and I absolutely love it.
On to quick fire questions. What is your favourite spice to cook with?
Ginger.
What is it about ginger that you like?
I like the spiciness, but I also like the cool flavour of it. It blends with many, many ingredients.
So is that fresh ginger?
Fresh ginger, yes. Not the ginger powder.
No, the powdered ginger is all right for cakes at Christmas.
Yes.
But the fresh ginger, there's something about it. Particularly when you grate it and it's all the liquid, the juice comes out.
Oh, that's lovely.
There's so much warmth and heat.
It's really, really good, Tom.
What did you have for dinner last night?
Oh, last night, I actually was in service and I was cooking with Crystal Pereira. So I ate her food.
And what was that? That's not a bad dinner. What was it?
She had made a prawn, Goan prawn curry. So I had it with a little bit of plain rice. And she had made wraps of lamb shakuti, which was delicious.
Wow.
Really, really good. So I had two of those and a bit of prawn curry. So quite heavy dinner, but enjoyed it.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a bad dinner. What's your favorite sandwich fill-in?
Always chicken. I love spiced chicken, to be honest.
Coronation chicken?
Kind of.
Yeah,
I was going to say that.
Coronation
I was going to say that.
Whoa,
a bit of coronation chicken. And if I may say that, I like putting a little bit of chopped apricots or maybe a little bit of raisins with that.
Yeah.
I love the spicy and the sweet flavor.
Yeah, they go really, really nice.
Incredibly
don't they?
Well. Yeah. And I made a toasties out of it as well. It tastes even better.
Oh, no. Like a proper old school one with the lid goes down.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I love that. That sounds delicious. I might have to have a go at that. What's the best kitchen tip you've ever been given?
Cooking of onions. In Indian cooking, onions take a very long time. And, you know, in professional kitchens, we sweat onions. I don't know, tons of it. So I worked with a chef in India, and I was at the stoves and doing many hours trying to sweat that. And he saw me for 2-3 days. And then this old man came to me. He said, "Son, next time you're sweating onions, just add a pinch of salt. It draws the moisture out so quickly, and you will enjoy cooking onions all your life." And I've always done that, Tom. And I think it was a great tip.
Yeah, it's really important, that, isn't it? A little pinch of salt draws the moisture out, helps soften everything, helps get it cooked quicker.
Colours it really well.
Yeah, helps get that steaming going on a real quick way. What's your most trusted recipe?
Most trusted recipe would be to pulao rice recipe. I absolutely love it.
Now, what's your most used spring ingredient?
Most used spring ingredient for me is definitely salmon and asparagus.
Salmon and asparagus, beautiful. Sits really nicely this time of year. Most overrated food?
Ooh, chocolate.
You're not a big chocolate fan?
I think we overdo the chocolate term because, you know, we, in for love of chocolate, and I think the entire world loves chocolate, but for the love of chocolate, I think we ignore a lot of other beautiful things which are around us. And I think sometimes, as a chef, I'm saying this, chocolate becomes a lazy ingredient for us to go to for desserts.
Easy go-to dessert, but yeah. Everyone does love it at all. Everyone loves it.
Everyone does it.
What's your most underrated food?
I personally would like to see us in the UK eat more seafood. And, you know, we just don't have to go to cod and salmon and mackerel. Don't rush to fish that chefs are saying we are cooking with it. There are still loads of fish available on the stalls, which are not loved. They're cheap. They're good. A fish called coolie. I absolutely love cooking with it. It goes with everything I want to cook. Goes in a curry. You can't put it in barbecue quite easily, but if you wrap it in the foil and you cook it, it comes out really well. So seafood is one of the ingredients that I think we should eat a lot more.
What's the worst thing you've ever eaten?
Worst thing? It was a worm in Malaysia.
Okay, that sounds pretty ropey already. Yeah. Was it cooked?
Yeah, it was sauteed in wild ginger and just a little bit of salt and in coconut oil. Tom, I don't want to think about it. To be honest, really, it was bad.
Was it like a long, wiggly garden worm, or was it?
Oh God! Now you want an explanation?
Like a short, fat, dumpy, like a wiggly grub in the jungle.
So I tell you what it is. So they have a lot of palm trees, and sometimes they get infested by these worms, and the palm tree falls. But this is full of worms. So these jungle people, they love those worms, so they go and collect all those worms, bring it home, and they saute it with this wild garlic, little bit of chili and salt. To them, it was the most delicious thing. But to me, oh my God, I don't want to do this again.
Now, and then lastly, what makes you optimistic for the future?
I'm always optimistic about future. And
you
I'm
can
always...
tell that. You're always optimistic, Atul. You're a ray of sunshine.
Thank you. I always say, you know, tomorrow will be better than today. I grew up in very hard economic times, Tom, and my parents really struggled. We were six of us, four daughters and two sons. And for them to put us through education and get us set in life was a big task. And when my mother passed away, I went to see her and I asked her, what was your best achievement? So she said, being mother to all six of you, it's been a joy. It's been tough, but it's been joy. And as a Hindu, we believe that there'll be incarnation of life. So I asked her, do you think we'll meet again? She said, no, there's a word called nirvana. When your soul sets free, I made such beautiful humans, my soul will be set free, so we wouldn't be meeting again. I think ethos is what my parents have given me. I believe in them. And when I start thinking about my mom or my parents and I look at my children, I think world is a beautiful place to live in.
Atul, what an amazing note to finish. Listen, thank you ever so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Looking forward to seeing much more of you throughout the summer and looking forward to watching the World Cook Series 2.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Cheers, Atul.
Cheers, Tom.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Good Food Podcast. Tune in next week when I'll be chatting to Liz Bonin about sustainability, the Caribbean and brunch. Don't forget our bonus cook-along episode is out on Thursday. For more recipes and inspiration, visit goodfood.com or download our app.